Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the United States versus House. Baglien, how close is that?
Baglien?
Well,
pretty good.
Good enough for government work, right?
Fair enough.
Good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Brad Baglien, and I'm here this morning on behalf of defendant appellant Adonis House. After a three-day trial in the Northern District of Illinois, Mr. House was convicted of distributing crack cocaine and ultimately sentenced to a sentence of 188 months in prison. Now, the issues on this appeal relate solely to that sentence imposed on Mr. House. If I may this morning, I'd like to confine my remarks to two issues that make a remand for resentencing in this case appropriate. The first of which is that the district court improperly imposed a two-level sentencing enhancement for obstruction of justice. The second is that the district court failed to properly consider Mr. House's argument under Kimbrough versus the United States prior to imposing Mr. House's sentence. Now, following trial, the district court here held a sentencing hearing. At that hearing, the court, based on Section 3C1.1 of the U.S. Sentencing Guidelines, imposed a two-level sentencing enhancement for obstruction of justice. Now, the basis of this enhancement was a conversation that took place between an individual named Mary Brown and an individual who intended to testify at Mr. House's trial, Sylvester Avery. This conversation occurred at random. Ms. Brown encountered Mr. Avery following a traffic accident on the west side of Chicago. And notably, Mr. House, the defendant, was not present for this conversation. That aside, the government alleged that Mr. House asked Ms. Brown to speak to Mr. Avery on his behalf. And based on that conversation that took place, the government asked for a two-level enhancement based on an unlawful influence of Mr. House's testimony.
However, there's no dispute about that Mr. House actually solicited her to have this conversation. The dispute is over how it should be interpreted, if I'm reading this correctly.
That's right. The dispute is not that Mr. House never spoke with Ms. Brown. I think the dispute surrounds whether Mr. House had the requisite intent to support the two-level enhancement. And that intent is something that this court has spoken to many times with respect to Section 3C1.1, and that's that the district court must find by a preponderance of the evidence that the defendant possessed the specific intent to obstruct justice. And that is what did not occur here. Now, if I can return to that standard, this court has spoken numerous times that a district court must focus solely on the conduct of the defendant. So the conversation that actually took place is less relevant than Mr. House's intentions with respect to that conversation. And this court has, of course, refined and spoken to that standard in a similar context as this, and that's when a defendant or individual has allegedly spoken to a potentially testifying witness. And what this court has said about that situation is that speaking to that witness could potentially support the enhancement, but only when that conversation was intended to threaten, intimidate, or otherwise unlawfully influence the witness. Now, it's important to note that the government has never alleged that any sort of threat or intimidation occurred in this case. Indeed, the government, during the sentencing hearing, admitted that the evidence that was presented in no way indicated that Ms. Brown intended to influence the testimony. So really, what the threshold issue here is whether we have unlawful influence, whether Mr. House's decision to ask Ms. Brown to speak to Mr. Avery amounted to an unlawful influence. And that is something that this court has defined as well. And it's defined it as an act that has a natural tendency to suppress or interfere with the discovery of the truth. And we can see here that that was not proven, and there was not sufficient evidence to support that contention. And if we can focus, on the evidence that was actually presented here at the sentencing hearing, the sole witness that was presented in support of the government's case was an FBI agent named Agent Helen Dunn. Now, Ms. Dunn was obviously not a party to the conversation that occurred. She, in fact, interviewed both Ms. Brown and Mr. Avery prior to trial. Notably, she did not speak to Mr. House prior to trial, and the government did not call either Ms. Brown or Mr. Avery as witnesses. And these were, of course, the only two individuals that were the parties to this conversation that occurred. And I think the important testimony that really came out here regarded Agent Dunn's conversation with Ms. Brown. Ms. Brown was the person who spoke to Mr. House and would probably be the best individual to speak to his intent with respect to that conversation. And in response, and I'll quote the testimony, the question was, did she tell you why Mr. House wanted this conversation to occur? So this is a question going at the threshold issue here. And the response was, Mr. House told Mary Brown and her brothers that he believed Mr. Avery was going to testify against him at trial. Mary Brown and her brothers did not believe that because they had known Sylvester Avery for a long time. So Mr. House wanted Mary Brown to ask him to see the reaction on his face, and he believed with that reaction she could determine that he was, in fact, going to testify. So I think the gist of that question and that answer is it's a question and answer getting to the issue of Mr. House's intent. And I think what that answer leads you to is that Mr. House wanted this conversation to occur to confirm Mr. Avery's identity as the confidential witness and not in any way to intimidate, threaten, or unlawfully.
Did Ms. Brown also say that she asked him not to testify?
I think this raises some of the problems with Agent Dunn being the only one speaking to the issue. There's certainly inconsistent testimony as to what was said at the conversation between Mr. Avery and Ms. Brown. But the reason I focused on this testimony is that it was in response to that question regarding Mr. House's intent. Now, regardless of whether Ms. Brown did in fact make comments of that nature to Mr. Avery, this is not an enhancement in a standard that's results-based. The focus is really on what was Mr. House's intentions when he spoke to Ms. Brown. So again, the reason I highlight that is that the particular response that I mentioned was in response to a question regarding Mr. House's intent. And notably in the record, we do not have a lot of indications as to what Mr. House's intent was with respect to that conversation with Ms. Brown. And this is, again, something that was, in fact, cited and consistent with the government's response to Mr. House's sentencing memorandum. And in discussing Agent Dunn's interview with Ms. Brown, the government wrote that Brown further stated that the purported purpose of this conversation with Avery was not to actually convince Avery not to testify, but rather to determine if Avery was indeed the cooperating witness identified by the government. So, again, the reason I'm quoting this passage and this testimony is that it's really going at the issue of Mr. House's intent as opposed to the issue of what was said during that conversation. Again, because this court has repeatedly said that the focus must be on Mr. House's conduct and not any conduct of Ms. Brown or of Mr. Avery. Now, confirming Mr. Avery's identity is not something that Mr. House had any reason to believe was inappropriate. If we look at the record, there's in fact statements from trial counsel, appointed counsel for Mr. House, that he had enlisted Mr. House's assistance with confirming Mr. Avery's identity. So this is an action that Mr. House believed was appropriate and believed was necessary because he did not at that time know the identity of the confidential informant.
Isn't there a timing issue with respect to that interpretation of this conversation, though, given that the government was ordered to disclose the confidential informant in, I guess it was January of 2007, and the conversation that forms the basis for the enhancement occurred some months later?
Well, I think that highlights something that isn't clear. I mean, throughout the record, there's never an indication of a specific date when this conversation occurred. I think the most accurate statement we have is several months before trial.
Which was June of 2007.
Trial was June. The order from the district court was in January. It gave them 30 days. So I think that's just a factual dispute. You see in the record that Appellant House's attorney was asking for assistance as early as November of the prior year of 2006. So it's perfectly feasible. In fact, we just don't know. It's just not clear as to whether that conversation occurred beforehand. And I'll reserve the remaining time for that.
Thank you.
Garcia?
May it please the Court. Counsel. Tony Garcia on behalf of the United States. The District Court did not commit clear error when it enhanced the defendant's sentencing by two levels for obstruction of justice. The main issue in this argument is what occurred at the time in order for the Court to enhance the two levels for obstruction of justice. And what was the defendant's intent at that time? The defendant did a couple of things. First, he contacted Mary Brown, and he told Mary Brown to contact Sylvester Avery. Sylvester Avery was testifying on behalf of the government. Additionally, the defendant asked Mary Avery to confront the defendant, to confront Sylvester Avery, and ask him not to testify. That is the basis for unlawfully influencing a witness from testifying in the government's case. The argument that the defendant was merely attempting to confirm the identification of Sylvester Avery is not supported by the record. The timeline in which this case develops is very clear. On August 31, 2006, the defendant was indicted. In September 12, 2006, he was arraigned and bond was set. At that time, his bond indicated that he was not to contact any witnesses directly or indirectly. And what did he do? He did. He contacted Mary Brown, had Mary Brown go out to Sylvester Avery and speak to him, and specifically asked Sylvester Avery not to testify against him. Most telling of what the defendant's intent is what the defendant believed Sylvester Avery's role would be in the prosecution. And what he said to Mary Brown and what Mary Brown told Agent Dunn is that the defendant believed that Sylvester Avery was needed in order to convict him of the crimes that were charged. That is the best evidence of what the defendant's intent was and why he wanted Mary Brown to approach Sylvester Avery. Additionally, on November 9, 2006, the defendant filed a motion requesting the disclosure of the confidential informant and also the undercover agent at this time. Looking further on in the timeline of this litigation, during the defendant's second supplemental sentencing memorandum, which is Record 92 at page 2, this sentencing memorandum indicates that the defendant had advised the defense attorney of the identification of the confidential informant, that being Sylvester Avery, and that occurred prior to November 9, 2006. Prior to November 9, 2006. That is approximately 6 to 7 months prior to the beginning of the trial, far in advance of the several months that Mary Brown approached Sylvester Avery. At that time, the defendant knew who Sylvester Avery was and that Sylvester Avery was the confidential informant. Additionally, the government had provided numerous evidence in discovery that would have led the defendant to believe who the confidential informant was, who Sylvester Avery and his identity, that being numerous audio recordings, video recordings, and on those audio recordings were conversations between the defendant and the confidential informant, that being Sylvester Avery. The mere intent and the intent of the defendant in this matter is that he was trying to influence and unlawfully influence the testimony of Sylvester Avery for him not to testify during this prosecution.
Of course, Mr. Garcia, this is all Mary Brown, Agent Dunn's interpretation of what Mary Brown said, right?
Your Honor, it is Agent Dunn's interpretation of what Mary Brown said.
We've got a slender read of hearsay here, haven't we?
We do, Your Honor. However, the hearsay in this matter for sentencing is reliable.
I understand it's admissible. I'm just suggesting to you that it doesn't get much thinner than this, does it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I'm not questioning the appropriateness of considering the hearsay at the sentencing. I'm just asking you, could it get much thinner than this?
Your Honor, yes, I believe it can, Your Honor.
I mean, we're trying to get the defendant's intent from an agent's interpretation of what Mary Brown allegedly said, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. However, Mary Brown did tell the agent that she did not believe that the defendant was attempting to intimidate Sylvester Avery, and that came out during the testimony, also during the sentencing. And the court found
How does that play against your other statement? Does that weaken the initial thrust of the conclusion that the intent was to intimidate?
No, Your Honor. As the court found, as the district court found during sentencing, that this was not a case of intimidation or threatening the witness. It was an attempt to influence or persuade another to act in a certain way. In this instance, to unlawfully influence Sylvester Avery from testifying on behalf of the government. The fact that the agent, Anne Marie Brown, provided the information that there was no intimidation shows the credibility and shows the reliability of the information that was provided to the district court, and the district court rely on that testimony and that evidence to make her finding and give the two-level enhancement for obstruction of justice. Briefly, if I may touch on the standard review, which was raised in the appellant's reply brief. The appellant argues that this case should be reviewed de novo. However, the government, asked the court to review this by clear error. In this matter, it is whether the district court's findings were supported by the evidence that were presented at sentencing, which the standard review for that is clear error, and which is clearly the standard for this case. The evidence that was presented was the FBI agent, Helen Dunn, testified to her interviews with Sylvester Avery and two separate interviews with Mary Brown, and whether that evidence supported the findings that the district court made in applying the enhancement for obstruction of justice. This is not a case where whether the court made sufficient findings on the record for the obstruction of justice. The court was very clear on what the findings were. The court specifically said, based upon the testimony of the agent, who I find credible, and the fact that it isn't necessary that there be a threatening communication, but just the interference of someone who's going to come into the courtroom to testify, just the attempt to influence or the attempt to persuade another to act in a certain way, whether it be through communication through another or through your own communication, I'm going to apply the two-level enhancement under the advisory guidelines and make into account that behavior that I review, the 3553 standards. The district court's decision was very clear. It's a matter of whether the facts that were provided and the evidence provided during sentencing were sufficient for the district court to make a finding, and that standard is clear error. The cases which the appellant cites in his reply brief deal with whether the district court made a specific finding underlying its decision to apply the two-level enhancements. Specifically, the defendant challenged in U.S. versus Guerrera the specificity of the district court's finding underlying its decision to apply two-level obstruction of justice enhancement for perjury. Both United States versus Guerrera and U.S. versus Sheikh, those are both perjury cases in which the district court had to make specific findings regarding the perjury and to find the elements for the perjury. In this matter, the district court made a clear record of its findings, and the issue is whether the evidence which was presented supported those findings. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Mr. Baglien?
I know I'm limited in time here, so I'll be quick. I think the government overstates the clarity of the timeline that we're looking at here. In fact, there was a misquote of that sentencing memorandum. The actual quote was that at that time, Mr. House informed his attorney that Mr. Avery may be the confidential informant. There was no clarity at that point. Again, this order was released by the district court in January of 07, giving the government 30 days to release that identity. So again, it's not clear when the government actually officially released that identity to Mr. House. And then briefly to address the issue of standard of review, there is a challenge to the specific findings here, namely that in the quote that the government just read, there's no addressing of Mr. House's specific intent. There's some general discussion of the standard that's involved and that it does, in fact, incorrectly need to amount to only an unlawful influence. But what's missing is any sort of finding as to why the district court concluded that Mr. House had that intent. And we'd ask that this court remand for resentencing. Thank you.
All right, thanks to both counsels. Back then, I want to give you an additional thanks for ably representing Mr. House and to thank your firm for also being supportive in doing this kind of work. Thank you. Case is taken under